Bobby Manning here, Dome Theory. We are back, episode 90 on deck today. We're going to have a couple of episodes this week as we get back from a mini hiatus. Last week, we did a Garden Report. On the end of the Kevin Durant saga, we're going to pick up the final pieces on that here today. My old producer on the show, Taylor McLeod, is here. You might have known him from the old Celtics postgame show days. He is now hosting the Cap podcast with my friend Nate Sperl, and they just did a great review of Jid's album, The Forever Story, which I loved. I actually want to get into some music talk with him here today, but we got carried away with the Durant stuff. Tiny bit of Gallinari, and then the Red Sox. You've heard me talk about the Red Sox in some of the opens here. I've certainly been tweeting about them throughout the summer. It's a group that I had hope in. At certain points, you know, Yankees series, the win in July, the big June, I was getting super excited. In fact, Taylor got me back about something I said back in late June. So we're going back and forth, and you know, we're bringing back the group chat edition of the show. So look forward to more of those music discussions. Want to talk Rock Marciano here, another album from Friday that just blew me away. We've had such a good music year. I feel like we're saying that more and more every year now. Back in 2000s, growing up, the stuff we came up on, not great. Definitely didn't age well. I was actually listening to F.U. by CeeLo Green. And that song, as far as radio hits go, aged about as well as any. And I remember him performing at the NBA Finals this year, and yeah, he was doing the censored version with the crowd, and, you know, there had to be some kids there, but the crowd was just yelling back, "Fuck you!" And there's a few other funny lines in there that that are funny to think about singing in an arena. Anyway, that was a fun memory. We're going to talk Red Sox, as I said. Football coming back rapidly. We've had some great coverage here on CLNS Media, even with Evan Lazare leaving. You know, Mike and some others filling in there. Been great. Check out Patriots Beat. I'm getting excited for week one. And certainly plenty of betting going on. NFL side. Football is back. Yes. September 11th, Patriots getting underway. Late next week, the NFL opener. Bet Online is your number one source for all your football betting needs. College back as well. So get started with that. You can find all the football odds, news, and game matchups over at BetOnline.ag. You know I love their website, including this year's opening week games. Get futures, props heading into the season. They got it all. Anything you can imagine, really, is going to be over at BetOnline.ag. And it's a good place to go and get some information. Super Bowl favorites, division favorites, win over unders. I did a lot of win over unders coming into this week. I'll share those with you next week. Might do maybe like a little bit of an NFL opener show. I actually have a couple plans over the next 2 weeks here to get us going. Bills-Rams is the opener. That's a good one. Bills 2.5-point favorites. You want to check out the Patriots? You can get them +3 with decent odds. -107 for their opener, 1 o'clock next Sunday. Sunday after this upcoming one. They got futures. They got an NFL draft next year if you want to bet on that. College futures, playoff specials. Who will make the playoffs? Want to bet on the Patriots making the playoffs? You're actually going to get plus odds, +145 on yes. They made it last year. Believe in them again? So much stuff over there. Baseball playoffs coming up in October. Final stretch. You can still bet on those games into September. NBA, back before you know it. All the futures are over there. Championship odds, still the Celtics, +500. A little bit of everything over at BetOnline.ag. You know, they've been a great supporter of the show. Love their product, love their website. So much to love about them. MMA, MLB, tennis, boxing, even golf. Great golf tournament on TV last week. Go over there and you're going to get a 100% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Yes, this week, 100% welcome bonus. Make sure you use the promo code CLNS50 to get your rewards. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. Shout out to them. Appreciate their support of the show, the network. And we are on to talk with Taylor McLeod here. Little KD, little Red Sox. I had to get this out. This Red Sox season has driven me crazy. Last year, I thought they built something really cool. I thought the city had a huge amount of buzz going into the postseason. I went to a ton of games in the fall. And now we're going to see an empty Fenway this September in October, which is super disappointing. And I think there's, as Chaim Bloom is about to be re-up for next year, the chance that this could get even worse, believe it or not. Taylor and I are going to go back and forth on that. Here he is now on Dome Theory number 90. Go check out betonline.ag, CLNS50. Go check out athleticgreens.com/garden. I'll tell you about that more in a little bit. To support the Garden Report as well as the network and support Dome Theory, follow at Dome Theory on Twitter. You can get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all the rest. Here is my friend Taylor McLeod.
Hey, Buddy Manning here. Welcome to number 90 of Dome Theory here on CLNS Media. And who was pretty instrumental to the start of this show way back when, a couple of years ago before the pandemic, and helped name it, I believe, as well, right? Right, Taylor? We a copyright infringed, a copyright infringed title to the podcast, and then we shifted it a little bit to something more original here. Yes. So Taylor McLeod is here. He is now co-hosting the Cat Podcast with our good friend Nate Spurman. You know, when we do some of our group, which I hope to get some more of going into the fall, the year sports get going again. Taylor used to produce here on Dome Theory and was a producer. So welcome back, Taylor. We've been going back and forth about the Red Sox quite a bit on our group text. And, you know, individually, and put it out there because the frustrations have reached a boiling point for me and for pretty much everybody. They're out of the contention from the wild card into September, which is, I think, pretty disgraceful given the field of teams that are in the mix there. There's no reason the Red Sox shouldn't be, especially with a big payroll, team that made the AL for the most part back. And it's hard to imagine how this is going to go into the future here. The big point, though, that's us off and got us going here today is that Bloom's going to be back as GM next year, and I'm not totally stunned by that, but we have some thoughts, we'll have some back and forth. But first, Kevin here got on Dome Theory, gotten to talk too much about the Kevin Durant saga coming to an end. We did a Garden Report last week on it. We've had some time to digest the whole trade saga and the Jaylen Brown implications and just what it meant for the Reds or Celtics to be involved in those conversations. Teams around the league, I think, are pretty much following suit. Heard the Heat saying, oh, yeah, we weren't really that interested, and the Suns saying something similar. And that's been the Celtics vibe throughout. Like, they had conversations regarding Durant and ultimately didn't get too far in negotiations, which is something I believe because Shams and Woj were saying throughout no one was close, and that was particularly because the Nets asking price was so high. Anyone was going to extend Rob Williams. Maybe you think about including Grant and Smart, something like that, get closer. But then they want years and years of picks on top of it. So there was never a realistic chance that this was going to get done. But it seemed Celtics were interested at some point, particularly in early July. What was your thoughts on their involvement throughout and just that whole saga?
It felt unnecessary, honestly. I understand putting out feelers. I understand being interested in Kevin Durant, especially for a team that just went to the finals. But at the same time, on the other side of that same token, this team did just go to the finals. And I know that it's a rings league now, and the discourse is rings, rings, rings. And it feels cliche to say it, but like another championship run, another run to the finals, hopefully with a different result for the Celtics, will be so much more special with this group. And instead of, you know, clearing out Jaylen and whatever else they wanted to get this guy who obviously would be an instrumental piece in a championship run, I think some of the narrative around Kevin Durant kind of got skewed during all of these conversations where people were acting like he's not Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? Where it was like, oh, like, they just got swept. And it's like, all right, well, like, yeah, sure. put him on a team that just went to the finals and things will look different. I don't know how anyone, you know, I don't necessarily understand how anyone felt differently about that. I think it's just over the years, especially with another trade request, KD has just vilified himself, or he's been vilified by a lot of fans. So I thought the whole conversation was unnecessary because I really believe in the Celtics as constructed, especially after the Brogdon trade. And obviously the Gallinari thing is up in the air because of his injury this past weekend. But it just, it felt kind of like, I guess, like, sure. Yeah, put out the feelers. That's what any responsible front office would do. But once I heard the packages they were looking for from Phoenix, where it was like, we want Booker, it's like, well, that doesn't that defeat the purpose of trading Kevin? Like, why would Phoenix do that? So that they can pair up Chris Paul and Kevin Durant and go, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make sense. So I thought when you really break it down, the Celtics probably had the best ability to make a deal like that and still be competitive because they weren't going to get rid of Tatum. So you keep that young star to pair with someone like Durant. But at the same time, it's like, I'm completely fine with where the Celtics are now. And to give up a Jaylen Brown for a ringer like that, just, I know it's a business and I know how it works, but it just wouldn't feel right.
Yeah. And I understand everybody who felt that way. I love Jaylen as much as the next guy. So I could feel why people didn't want him thrown off the team and Durant brought in, particularly because people don't like Durant. I think that's what it came down to. Although I do think there's going to be an interesting conversation to be had after this saga, and depending on what happens next with the Nets about his legacy. And I know he laughs at that and clowns it on Twitter, but it's a conversation to be had with every basketball player. I mean, we talk all the time about all the guys from the past, and we debate the top 75, and we say who's 1 and who's 10 and who's 15 and all this different stuff. And when you're looking back at Durant now, and I like him a lot. There's a big reason I wanted him on the Celtics initially for a certain price, is that he's just phenomenal on the floor, hitting the mid-ranger, finishing at the basket. Passing-wise, he's pretty good. Defensively, at his best, he was a dynamic player, and maybe not quite the same anymore. And people had worries about him reaching 34, a couple years post-Achilles, all that stuff. But last year, what was it, 50, close to 40, close to 90, 30 points a game. It was as good as he's ever been. And yeah, you mentioned the first round series where they, again, I'm still amazed what the Celtics did to him physically and defensively in that series. Everyone was a little nervous going into that. And then all of a sudden, game one, Horford's like slapping the ball away from him and he's getting banged around like a pinball in the post. So that was people's last vision of him. But he was, especially before the sprain, phenomenal. Like, he was the MVP front runner or one of them. So I still expect him to be close to that level. But you think of all the off-court stuff at this point. His support of Kyrie through the whole ordeal, and that seemed to be a big reason he demanded the trade, right? Is kind of because they didn't give him that contract. His kind of back and forth with the Warriors fan base and the people who didn't like him making that move, even though I think when you look back on it, it was probably the right move for him, especially championship-wise and contention-wise. There really wasn't another situation that would have been anywhere close to that, even staying in Oklahoma City. We saw what happened with Russ. So I love him. And you know what? People have really soured on him. I think he's kind of become a nasty, combative figure, which, you know, there's got to be villains in sports, and he's one of them. And I think he plays a great role in that. It's just he doesn't seem to have made the greatest decisions in his career. This seems to be the latest mistake. And I don't know how the Nets are going to be able to come together after he did this. Like, they start slow, deep back, and like, all right, do I want out? Is Nash the coach? All this different drama they've dealt with for 3 years.
Yeah, I think when it comes to his, like, decisions or you know, whatever you want to, however you want to frame it, I think it's up to him, and his play has allowed him to make a lot of those decisions because, like you said, like, you have the conversations about, you know, top 10, top 15. He's right there. And it's deserved. It's not a manufactured, like, conversation to have about Kevin Durant. And I also think that, I guess, honestly, like, I just don't care. Like, that's what it boils down to, is like, they're gonna be what they're gonna be. I don't care about what he does. Like, I don't care about what he tweets. I don't care about him going back and forth. I don't care that he made a trade request. That's just what happens now. And I think it became pretty obvious from the beginning of those trade request talks, especially to me, things ended when the Ayton stuff unfolded. Because for a while I was like, okay, the packet, it'll be a sign and trade with Ayton. You get Bridges, you get Cam Johnson, you get a package from Phoenix. I thought that was the most likely situation. So you have CP3, Booker, and Durant on the same team in the West in a not major market. So it's kind of, obviously there would be a ton of attention because it's those three guys, but it's a little different than playing in Brooklyn. So yeah, right. But Brooklyn still is New York City. And especially with Kyrie on the team, like there are more eyes on it. And I think that like last year was just such a mess for that team. And you can blame whoever you want, but it was a mess. Like take away all.
Imagine if it happened on the Knicks. I say that all the time. Right. My Lord.
Well, if it happened on the Knicks, I mean, like in our lifetime, like that's what, not so much like the pandemic stuff or the vaccine stuff, but like you and I haven't seen, besides like 1 or 2 years, really good Knicks teams. So like that would be like par for the course for them with a little more, you know, of a circus. But I guess I just don't like, I don't really pay it a ton of attention. If
related to the on-court stuff, Taylor, because they've been a disappointment. And I left Durant out of that. I think most people did because he was playing well. But you see the kind of passive leadership from him. And there's another thing. He jokes about it, but it's a real thing. He doesn't want to be involved in the important paths that the team has to take in terms of like, all right, let's get Kyrie out here on the floor. Can we put some pressure on him to get out there? The whole Harden situation faded away with him just kind of standing to the side. And I read the book about that first season that they had together and all this different politicking going on with the coach and the young guys, the veterans and Kyrie. And he's just sort of standing there rehabbing. And he's the guy who put this together, right? So the second it goes bad, he wants Marks fired. He wants Nash fired. He wants all these different organizational changes and an extension for Kyrie for what, you know? And like, these are the guys that brought Jordan in there. Bad decision. They wanted Allen out of there, even though that wasn't necessary to make the Harden trade, it seems. And so yeah. This group, 2021, I know we'll talk forever about that Bucks series and the injuries and everything else. I think the biggest factor in why that series and why that season went the way it did for them was injuries. But there was such close, like, second place, third place things going on, whether it was the bad coaching, the defensive lack of attention, all the, like, poor aging veterans that were out on the floor. Those things, I think, had much of a factor to do with it as the injuries. Like, Giannis just kind of went and willed them the victory. And in that overtime, I always say it, game 7, nobody stepped up besides Bruce Brown. And now Bruce Brown's gone. Like, what's up with that? There's so many bad decisions being made and there's no accountability being taken. And Durant certainly wants none of it.
Yeah, I think just that's just kind of indicative of how things go now. Like, especially with the tweets and stuff, like turning every single tweet into news, turning every single thing into news, turning every single like this or that. They went to overtime against the champs in game 7. And like I understand that the other stuff isn't important, but like you don't have James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Like that is the most important part. And like, it is like, I don't know.
Now Harden's gone.
Well, I understand Harden's gone. I think that Harden thought that situation was going to be a much, much different deal than it was. And last year, honestly, like we've seen a lot of weird stuff with the NBA in the, you know, 15 or so years that we've really been able to follow it since we were old enough to really, you know what I mean? Like be into it. I don't think I have ever seen a season last year that was so strange. So like, all right, Kyrie isn't here and he won't be here at all. But you know what? Harden's playing well enough and Durant is playing like an MVP. And then it's like Durant goes down, everybody on the team gets COVID. So now Kyrie's at halftime, like he plays half the time. Like it was just a weird season for them. And I'm not saying it's like a blameless weird season. There are certainly people to blame and there's decisions that need to be blamed for it, but especially being a Celtics fan and where the Celtics went last year and in the road they took to the finals and their, you know, bad first two-thirds of the season last year really turning it around, I guess I'm just not even like thinking about what's happening in Brooklyn because I just like it's almost like the Celtics have bigger things to worry about, and I feel
should they be? Because I think a lot of people, once Durant reunited and bought in again here, said, all right, they're going to be maybe top of the East. I think Stephen A. said that, top third, top three there. I could see it, right, because the talent's there. Yeah. It's on paper. Durant is great. He's had time to recover from the injury and everything like that. And Kyrie, again, I think it was 50-40-90 2021. He's still got it. And if he's playing every game, they should be a pretty prolific group. I just have to see it, right? I have to see Simmons get back on the court. See TJ Warren show. I mean, he got a minimum deal, right? So something's going to be up there. The defense at the guard position, they really don't have many bigs. I think their fans were freaking out because they signed Morris today over another big. So I have to see it. And Nash, still, I look at him and I'm like, is he going to be able to hold this group together messaging-wise through camp? Is there going to be drama to start it off? Is Irving going to do something, right? Because I know everybody looks at last year and they say, like, oh, if there wasn't any vaccine mandate, this wouldn't have happened. It's always something, though, with Irving, right? Like, it was the birthday party and the hiatus 2 years ago.
You're not going to get me to say anything bad about him.
If there's a drama-free year with Kyrie this year, I'll give it to him. And he kind of has to have that year, right? Because this is his last year on his contract going into free agency.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to expect from them. I have to see them be good for me to be convinced that they're going to be good. I'm not just going to believe it.
I think that's a good point. And I think that's why I just don't care for much of the speculation, because we haven't really seen it all together at once, except for through points of 2021 when all three guys were on the floor at the same time. But now one of those three isn't there anymore. So it's a completely new thing. Like, that's what I mean when I say I don't care. I just don't care to speculate because we haven't seen what it looks like. And until we do, like, let's give it 10 games, let's give it 20 games. And then I'll be like, all right, let's see how it's going. And obviously things can change after that, the beginning, those first couple games. But like you said, we haven't seen it yet. And until we do, I don't have any desire, any want to, speculate either way, because we could get all this speculation in order and then all of a sudden something blows up right before the season. And all of a sudden, like, one of the guys actually is gone, because that's how it goes over there.
Yeah, it's always something. Through 3 years, it's been very little basketball for them. Year one was a wash. Year two, a little bit of drama mixed in. Kyrie took that hiatus, and then last year, like we talked about. But who is the biggest threat to the Celtics in the East? We both agree Milwaukee, probably, right?
Yeah. No, yeah.
No doubt about it. Joe Ingles was a great addition there. That series was something. I know we kicked off talking about that Nets series, but that Bucks series was, that took years off your life. Game five, going down 3-2 the way they did on the putback. Game six was kind of scary early. They went down in the first quarter, right? And then Tatum had that ginormous second half that saved the season. And then you have the Grant game in game seven. That's stuff you're never going to forget. And then Middleton was out, right? But yeah, still, they're a load even without him.
Yeah, the thing about Middleton being out, though, is like when the Celtics didn't have Jaylen the year before, no one felt bad for them when their best player was Tatum with Evan Fournier as their number two. Like, I don't feel bad. Like, it's just how it goes. It's something to take into account. It's something to
consider. Celtics didn't have Rob.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. And it's like, that's a good point. Like, I just hate that. Like, oh, well, if Middleton, and then the next series, they're like, well, if aging Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry. Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, like, sure. If Rob Williams was healthy and not hurt at all, we saw how you and I were talking about it in March. They're dismantling teams when Rob was
healthy.
They
won 22 of 25.
Yeah, and they got the one seed. They moved into first place in the East, and Rob got hurt that night. And then things kind of, like, got a little shaky from there on out. So, like, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because everyone's like, Middleton and Kyle Lowry was hurt. I was like, okay, like, all right. I guess.
What kind of, Tatum was hurt too, right? He went on Taylor Rooks Tatum and told everybody.
And he didn't even talk about the injury we were all worried about. He talked about his wrist, which had been hurt from the middle of the season. He didn't even talk about his shoulder, which all of us were more concerned about, because that's what he was like when he was hurt on the floor against Miami in what was that, game three?
Yep.
When he actually got hurt in his shoulder, like, we were all more concerned about that. And then he, in the offseason, he's like, oh, that happened and my wrist was broken.
You know what's so funny about that run? There were so many moments where you went, uh-oh, Like the old Celtics are bad. I remember Tatum just sitting on the floor, plays going back and forth. They're getting run off the floor by the Heat, and I'm like, oh, geez, here we go. But yeah. Then, the Heat were pretty banged up. I don't buy the Heat this year again. I feel like I'm in this position every year. I'm like, oh, they're not great. Then all of a sudden, they're the one seed, and they're looking pretty imposing going right into the season. But this is the other double standard. You talk about the injuries. Every time the Celtics get involved in trade talks and they're putting all these people on the table, it's like, oh, the Celtics, or they're disrespecting their players, or blah, 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 blah. But meanwhile, every time a star is available, the Heat go, all right, you can have Hero, you can have Robinson, you can have this guy, that guy. But no one blinks.
No, I know.
And everyone's just got to – Bam was on the table too in the Durant stuff, right?
It's Pat Riley. That's because it's Pat Riley, and he's NBA royalty. And the Celtics traded Isaiah Thomas for a far superior player, so now they're the villains for the rest of time. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it goes. But I got, like, 20 minutes, so let's get into what we're here for,
all right,
Mr. Manning.
Let's talk some Red Sox. First, though, Athletic Greens, they're showing love to the Garn Report, so we show them love here in Dome Theory as well. Go to athleticgreens.com. It's a one-stop powder that you're going to put in your water every morning. It's got 75 vitamins, minerals, antigens, probiotics, all these different things that are great for your health, green juices. You try different pills and different things to put in your meals and all these different kind of health things that cost you big money. For each individual part of what Athletic Greens brings all together in one powder, great packaging, great bottles. I've been using it for about a month and a half. It gives you that little boost of energy, and you know, with diet and exercise and all that stuff, boost your immune system, vitamin D here, as you can see, into the fall. It's just great. You know, try it. The reviews are amazing. Don't take my word for it. We've told you about it in the Garden Report. People love this stuff. So if you go to athleticgreens.com/garden, gonna help out the Garden Report, gonna help out Dome Theory, CLNS Media. They're going to give you a year's supply of vitamin D as well as 5 free travel packs, which are key if you're out on the go in the morning, going to work, all that different. Tastes great. Really does. Tropical flavor. athleticgreens.com/garden. Message at @John_Zanis, and he's going to give you a Garn Report phenomenal t-shirt from my catchphrase there on the show. So go check them out. Go see if it's for you. Just give it a try. athleticgreens.com/garden. And we're on to the Red Sox. So where do we start with this? Because I loved last year's team. I really did. That's fun. I'm saying if they get in, this team's got the lineup. They can hit anybody. They got Bogarts, Devers, Martinez, all these guys that were raking last year. The Arbo, who brought their walk rate from like bottom of the league to the top of the league. And they ended up being prolific. I went to so many games down the stretch of last year. Fenway had a vibe that I hadn't really seen before, whether it was younger people going and just a greater level of attendance and noise and fervor. For a team that didn't have this massive pedigree, like Ortiz is gone, some of the championship pieces, particularly Mookie Betts, gone. There was a lot of anger in the fan base and how that went down. And still, they get through the Rays, which I love. I'm not a huge Rays fan. They go into that series against Houston, who's this big four still, you know, all these years into this run, and they had them up 2-1, up in I believe the eighth inning,
and then they got killed. Five.
Yeah, and I went to the bathroom,
just dismantled.
Yeah, it was like 7 runs in that inning after the missed strike call, which whatever. They lose, and Houston moves on and loses to Atlanta, which kills me too because I feel like the Red Sox are gonna match up with Atlanta. So going into this year, trade Hunter Renfro for Jackie Bradley and a couple prospects. And that's when I went, uh-oh. And they didn't replace Renfro. They didn't get a first baseman, which was kind of a problem last year. And the bullpen, of course, as we just talked about, the meltdown late in that Astros series was a big problem last year. And they didn't do anything to fix that. The other ominous thing that happened early this year is they put Garrett Whitlock in the rotation, which I think we both had issues with and didn't go well, becoming the closer, and all right on down the line the pitching falls apart. So within the last week, they cut 2 relievers, they've cut Jackie Bradley at this point, they traded Vasquez before a game and brought in a couple guys, Tommy Pham, Hosmer, who I love, you know, a couple good moves there, but it's seen the loss at catcher, what they gained in those pitching, they didn't do anything with the pitching. So all these different moves have put them in last place. They're losing in embarrassing ways every other day. They are completely out of the wild card mix in the September, even though most contenders are still close enough. And they decide that they're going to bring back Bloom and Corbin's to blame for any of this at all. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of hope in the front office. So, certainly ownership's in this as well, but they're playing luxury tax. I think this is just a lot of different mistakes, Taylor, and kind of just passiveness by this front office that hasn't filled every position that you need on a baseball team.
No, I think there's some things that happened that shouldn't have happened. Some belief was put in some guys that shouldn't have been put there. I think from the very beginning, things fell off. Obviously, had the lockout. They didn't re-sign Schwarber, which was a mistake. Like, because I don't think it would have taken a massive contract. I don't know exactly what he got from Philly. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But I don't think it would have taken a groundbreaking deal to bring him back. And unfortunately, they believed in Bobby Dalbec's second half million. Of 2021. Yeah, so $20 million a year. They believed in Dalbec's the back half of 2021. And they were like, all right, we have a power hitting first baseman. Chris Sale got hurt in spring training, which, and Houck did too, which put Whitlock in the rotation, which automatically was a red flag for me, because you looked at how much he had worked in previous years, especially last year. And after a couple starts, he was starting to approach how much he had worked the previous season. And that's not sustainable. We're seeing it with John Schreiber right now, where his previous season high had been 15.2 innings or 15 and two thirds. And now he's up to 52 and two thirds. And we're starting to see some of the, you know, negative effects of that. So I think some things happened that just shouldn't have. In terms of the Vasquez trade, I like the two prospects they got, especially Valdez. And it's interesting that Houston traded for him to be their backup catcher, especially with him hitting 280 and being a proven game caller and a proven backstop. So that trade I'm kind of impartial on, especially because there is the chance they re-sign him in free agency. I know we've said that about other guys, John Lester. People are talking about that
with Bogarts
at the deadline. They're like, no, I don't necessarily see it either. I think it's really hard to re-sign a guy right after you trade him. But if someone was to come back from something like that, to me, like, Christian Vasquez is a perfect candidate. He's not a top flight guy. He's not a top of the line, you know, guy who's out there demanding, you know, the high end dollars. So I think there have been a ton of mistakes on the front office's part. And if Bloom needs to be the scapegoat for that, then it makes sense. And we've seen that happen before, right? Like, 2014 was a terrible season. And then I think it was in July or August of the next year was when Charrington was removed, Dombrowski was put in place. And then, you know, in that offseason, you empty the farm out. Or not that offseason, but the next consecutive offseasons, you empty the farm out and you end up with a World Series championship. But for me, all this starts with ownership refusing to pay Mookie Betts, refusing to give him the $350 million he wanted at the time, because we're already seeing how it's playing out. Not so much with Bogarts, because Bogarts is a little bit – he's in a different situation. He's on the other side of 30. His power numbers have been down for the last 4 or 5 years, so that's a whole other conversation. But we're seeing it play out with Devers now, where Devers is saying that he hasn't even been offered any sort of extension from the Red Sox.
Well, the Bogarts offer was a joke, too, and they did less, right? They lowballed them, and this one was even worse. It was 1 year, $30 million on top of what he already was making with this contract, right, which he's obviously going to opt out of. It's a joke.
Yeah, like that part, I think they're confident in how shortstop can shape up over the next couple of years, especially with Marcelo Meyer coming through the farm. And I know that you don't like prospects, but they do have a top 10 farm
system.
He's
the big one, though, right?
He is the big one. I mean, he's the big one in the lower ranks. I think right now, Bayo is already up, Brian Bayo, and he got hit around last night, but like, he was graded to have, I think, the best changeup in AAA and one of the best pitchers in AAA. And then I'm so excited for Tristan Casas. I can't really tell you why he's not up already. He's mashing in AAA.
So his numbers aren't this season. Yeah, Yeah, he's missed the time, and the numbers aren't great, which is what gives me a little pause on him, especially just handing over the reins to him, because they did that with Bobby, right? And he's probably got more pedigree than Bobby.
Yeah, but
right?
Bobby and Cassius are not the same situation. And honestly, I'm excited to see Colton Wong at the major league level too. Or Colton Wong, Jesus, no, that's the second baseman. Connor Wong, their catching prospect that they got with Verdugo in the Mookie trade. I'm excited to see him.
We saw a little bit of him last year. Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of these guys. Downs too. Like he was up for a minute and he didn't look great, well, he got hurt.
He definitely looked a little lost at the plate, similar to Duran when Duran was touted as someone who was supposed to be a bat. He really showed off. Like, he's a great athlete, and I think that there's room for him to grow. But he also is like a 26-year-old who I think still has rookie status.
He is,
which
a disaster.
Always gets kind of tough. Well, yeah, they've just moved him around, and I think he has some mental fortitude stuff that needs to happen a little differently, and it might be a situation where he has a much better time somewhere else.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I think
where
it's
like
too, you know, like Cora doesn't even look at him when he goes into the bullpen after some, or the dugout rather, after some of these blunders, and they didn't sit him after any of those drop balls either. The moment of the season is going to be him dropping the ball in center field, and the Blue Jays just flying around the bases. This whole thing went off the rails, and it's amazing to think about, and this is what makes me most upset about the season. The 11 games over 500 on June 26th, firmly in a playoff spot. They just swept the Tigers and Guardians, and they go to Toronto.
I know.
And the closer stays home because he didn't want to get vaccinated. Duran stays home because they didn't want to get vaccinated. It becomes this whole drama because, of course, you're missing a couple position guys that you're relying on there, particularly the closer. They blow a game because who knows who was closing the game instead of Houck. And then they lose a series in Chicago, lose a series in Tampa, lose a series in New York, get swept by Tampa in four games, and it goes off the rails here all the way back to Fenway in the 28-5 game. And July just ended up being a disaster. Guys got hurt, but you also had key positions that weren't filled. Like we said, corner outfield. You had a stretch where Trevor Story's been hurt here, which, again, I don't really want to go back and forth on that signing yet because I don't think we know yet what that's going to become.
It's tough because he got – yeah. His injury definitely makes it tough. But something about where they were on June 26th, if I remember correctly, there's this Red Sox fan that I talked to like on a daily basis told me up until that point that they're – like they're a team that you just don't watch them this year, right? And then that series in Cleveland, that weekend series, the same Red Sox fan was like, I'm all in now. I'm in. And they've been terrible since. So that Red Sox fan, I think you probably know who it is. Do you?
No. That's great. I didn't know who you were talking about.
You told me up until that series that it was a team that you just don't watch. In that series, they played well, and you were like, I'm all in. And obviously, I'm just, like, playing around, but it has been.
Well, I had the Celtics run. I didn't get to watch
them
early on.
It has been some of the worst baseball I've watched as a Red Sox fan.
It is embarrassing.
Oh, my God. But like, it's also
not. And meanwhile, Chris Sale, in the middle of it, gets hit by a pitch, and you're like, all right, this season's just kind of cursed at this point. When that happens in a second start back, but then a week later, he's flying off the bike, and it's like, this is a clown show, you know? And someone's going to pay for that.
There's definitely some speculation about whether or not the bike thing is actually what happened. Like, there is.
I don't even know what to speculate there. Yeah.
No.
He hasn't been around the team, right? You haven't seen him in the dugout or anything like that.
The Sale thing is so tough because obviously he struggled last year with some injury stuff. And then we were excited, especially with the lockout, maybe a little bit more time to get a little more of a clean slate for him. And then he has the rib cage injury in spring training. And then things are kind of, we don't really know what's going on. This season just got off to a terrible start. And then you look at when it first happened, the Renfroe JBJ trade, I was relatively impartial to it because the biggest complaint about Renfroe was his defense, and obviously he's had a great defensive season this year. And it was like, all right, we're getting JBJ back. That's a guy that we all love. That's a guy we've, you know, come to really know for the last decade. But then you remember what it's like to have Jackie Bradley in your lineup. And when the rest of the lineup is bad, it gets magnified. So I think there have been a bunch of mistakes this year on the field, off the field, but I think the biggest catalyst for it all is just a lack of commitment from the people signing the checks to keep their best players happy and paid. I mean, they had the second best player in baseball on their team who loved being in Boston, was a staple in Boston, World Series champ, MVP, and they traded him for I like Alex Verdugo, but they traded him for Alex Verdugo, Connor Wong, and Jeter Downs.
And then the Dodgers won the World Series right away. Yeah.
Right. So that's tough. And then we have this thing where, like, Xander Bogaerts is the longest tenured player on the team. He's effectively the captain. You know what I mean? He is the calming presence in the lineup. Obviously, his power's been down, and there's speculation that he's dealing with some injuries this year, but he's admitted to it. Like, the way that they've given him the runaround for the whole season, it's affecting things. JD is down, and he'll tell you that. He's hit 10 home runs this year, and it's looking like we're really, really in the twilight of his career at this point. And then you have Devers, who says he hasn't even been offered an extension when, until he was hurt, he was putting up MVP numbers. And he's so clearly the best player on this team, and he's so clearly the generational talent, and he is the one. And right now, with him coming up after next year, we have no idea if he's going to get signed or not. Like, literally,
he could
no
be
idea.
Connected to Bogaerts. And at this point, like, this thing's become such a clown show. This thing has gone off the rails so much that you wonder what it's done for morale, what it's done for the development of some of these guys. Like we said, Duran's lost. I mean, they've totally whiffed that thing. Bobby looks completely out of it at this point. And he actually showed some signs last year. A few key home runs down the stretch of the season as they were making that wild card push. He looked like he could be something. And now at this point, it looks like he's nothing. Like, letting this completely go off the rails the way it has, I think it has some damaging effects. Because you may not have believed in this team as a contender. You might have even thought that they were on the outside of the playoffs looking in. But from them going from a borderline competitive team that should have been playing real baseball in the September to this disaster, that's going to cause some damage down the line. Like, I quietly worry of Cora's future, especially if it's bad in the next year.
Based on reports, yesterday Carrabba said, and it seemed like he was pretty plugged in, that Alex Cora will be the manager of the Red Sox until he doesn't want to be.
That's good.
Which I believe way more than Bloom being safe. Because it's way easier to scapegoat a GM. It's way easier.
And Cora did a good job for all those flaws. You said 11 games over 500 to start. And I think he's...
I mean, June they went 20-4 in June. Had an incredible month. And then you lose a couple guys to injury. You lose Story. Christian Arroyo goes down. Who it didn't seem like the biggest deal in the world when it happened, but then he comes back and he starts tearing the cover off the ball. And it's like,
this is a competitive group. Yeah. And they got good leadership internally. Again, though, with this Bloom thing, like, people inside the organization are saying, what's he doing? And all the players are like, where is this guy when Vasquez is getting traded? And there's just, even to the manager, I think there's not a real strong belief in him. The owners certainly do. They like the way he's cutting costs and corners on things, but I don't think this team likes this guy at all. I mean, they're trading teammates, they're not giving them reinforcements. Bogaerts was at the All-Star break kind of saying, like, hey, let's go, come on, let's make some moves here, look what happened last year.
Yeah.
And then Pham comes in right off the bat, starts raking, and we could have done this 4 months ago if the GM signed me and it didn't cost much.
And I really like the Pham acquisition. I hope he's back next year. And I think this season just got off to such a poor start. Like, on the field, they didn't play well. April was miserable. The first half of May was miserable. And then they had to dig themselves out of a hole to break even. And then they finally got to, like you said, 11 over 500. They had the first wild card. It looked like, all right, the Yankees have the division locked up, because at that point, I mean, even after going 20-4 in May, I think the Red Sox lost ground on the Yankees, which was pretty dispiriting. And then you have a couple guys go down to injury. You have a bad 2 weeks, and then Chris Sale takes a 108-mile-an-hour line drive off his finger and holds his hand up, and his finger is snapped in half. And right at that moment, I know there were some other moments, and it's fun to believe, and obviously, like, watching every single game, like, like a lot of fans do, like I definitely do, it's way easier to convince yourself that some miracle is going to happen and turn the game on every night. Because if it's a foregone conclusion that it's over, then it obviously gets a lot harder to watch the game every night. But once Chris Sale got hit by that pit or hit by that line drive in his hand and he broke his finger, it was kind of like, this feels like a season that's just not meant to be. And it reminds me a lot of 2014. It reminds me a lot of 2015. Not so much of 2012, not so much of 2020 with the COVID year. Even 2019 was a third place finish. But the last point I'll make, obviously you have Fenway Sports Group. They went and bought Liverpool. They went and bought the Penguins. LeBron's involved now. And it seems like there's a lot of other things going on. But if there is one thing that we've seen from the Red Sox over the years, they don't really lie down for very long. I mean, 2004 to 2007, that team, there was a lot of good, you know, continuity between that. But you add Beckett, you add Lowell. From 07 to 13, you had, although they failed,
they pivoted so many times in philosophy. They have.
Right. You had some big acquisitions where they went and got Adrian Gonzalez. They went and got, you know, Carl Crawford. And obviously those turned into a trade that kind of brought some stuff in for that 13 run. The 13 run was more scrapped together. And obviously on the shoulders of David Ortiz. But post 13, you have 2014 where they lost Lester. They lost Gomes. They lost a lot of that heart. And then in 15, they made, I think they hit on Hanley. I think people don't give that move enough credit. But you go and you get Hanley and you get Sandoval. And the Sandoval thing is a miserable, miserable experience. Right. And then the next year they go and get Price. Right. And then once Hanley moved to first, I mean, he had another 30 and 100 season for, and if you look at the defensive metrics and the percentages, he played really good defense at first base. And then you have the Mookie Betts of the world come up, the Benintendis come up, Devers in 2017.
Pedroia got hurt around
that.
You have
these things.
Time too, right?
Yeah, because Pedroia was an all-star in 16. You add Kimbrel. So if there's one thing we've seen is that they're not willing to string together too many of these really bad seasons. So I would expect them to make some noise this offseason. And if they don't, that's when the alarm bells that you're hearing, if this offseason is a complete dud, then me and you will be in the same boat. That's like, all right.
Well, this is what worries me. If they have a dud of a season, they struggle in the next year. Bloom's gone, right?
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yes.
They did with Sherrington. So I don't like bringing him back if you're starting to worry internally, because then more mistakes are going to be made. Going to be deeper in this hole. You might lose Bogarts or any of these other disasters that could happen here over the next year or so. And then there's no turning back. You're in a worse place. It's like you said, I like the 14 comparison because 15 ended up being even worse, right? They had the whole five aces thing and everything like that.
So, yeah, 15 was pretty miserable.
So I'm worried. I'm giving them a chance. I'm keeping an open mind, right? Because I've liked individual moves. I like some of the pieces they've added here. But what are you doing? Keeping Bogarts, you got to fix this bullpen. You got to get effectively five starters, right? All the starters are free agents or just, you know, Rich Hills or whatever. But and then you got to get a DH, right? So there's a lot of spots to fill here. They have a lot of money, but it's not going to be easy as they've sustained this year. So I'm keeping an open mind. It's not going to be easy. The division's tough. And I don't know. I don't have a strong faith in the GM. I don't.
Hey, I have as much faith in Bloom as I have in the ownership group, because they are the ones who ultimately make things happen. I know that the GM is the one making the decisions and this and that and this and that, but it ultimately comes down. If you look at the Dodgers, you look at the best teams in the league, it ultimately comes down to who's.
Well, you think they're going to keep Bogarts?
I'd be interested to see what happens with Bogarts, because this season did not help his market value at all. And whether or not that helps the Red Sox or their unwillingness to give him the money when he wanted it hurts them, because he's a Boris guy. So it's not like they're dealing with a, you know, team friendly agent. They're dealing with a guy who's literally like what he's known for, going to get the most money for his guy, regardless of what team it is. So would I be upset if they let Bogarts go? Yes. But at the same time, if he wants to get paid 30 plus million a year from his age 31 season on to when however old he is, it wouldn't hurt my feelings if they don't give him that. It would suck to see him because he is Bogarts, he is Xander Bogaerts, and he is the most important player on the team. Him and Devers are, you know, head and shoulders above everyone else, in my opinion. But if he wants 30 plus a year for the next 8 years, I don't know if that happens.
Yep. And then does that lead to Devers leaving? Because like I said.
Well, right. And that's the real danger.
Devers is gone. I'm gone. I don't know what's left to stay for at that point. Gone.
Right. And after the Mookie trade, I was pretty.
You can't lose three corners in 3-4 years. It'd be insane.
Not when you're the Red Sox. It's not the Rays where that's what they do. They make these, you know, generational talents and then they ship them off. You are the Boston Red Sox. You're supposed to be able to retain these guys like you did with, you know, keeping Manny for 8 years, Ortiz for, 15 years. And those contracts. Negotiations weren't always easy with Ortiz either. There's a lot of one-on-ones, a lot of one-year deals, a lot of going back to the table every single offseason. But something has to give because Red Sox fans are already restless, and the Boston Red Sox that you and I grew up on, not our parents' Red Sox, not our grandparents' Red Sox that they constantly told us about growing up. They're like, well, you've had it great. It's like, yeah, we have had it great, and there's an expectation now,
yeah,
to keep it that way. That is where I'll leave you. I got to go off to work. But, Bob, it was great to talk to you. I'm glad to be back on Dome Theory, and hopefully I'll be back again soon.
That's Dome Theory 90. I think we're there. We'll check in on the Red Sox again in the springtime, see where they're at. New basketball edition coming later in the week as well. Hope to have a good guest on for that. Book I read recently. I want to talk to this guy about it. So we'll let you know more at Dome Theory. Subscribe, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, all the rest. And look out for a new Garden Report tomorrow here on CLNS Media. I'm Bobby Manning. We will talk to you soon.